Oh, hello, welcome to the non-sutra class today. I have flicked through it and tried to find a sutra that I've... Basically, I have my two favorite ones that I did a few times. And so I find something different in the last two... Try to find something different in the last 2 days. And nothing really kicked in that I really wanted to do. So I recently discovered a passage from one of the suttas, and I'm going to read that out, and I give you a few thoughts that I have about that passage, and see if we can do anything with that. And if nothing comes out, then I'm going to go to the subject that I'm familiar with. To my favorite sutras, but I hope that won't be necessary. And the reason for that is we have monks in the monastery who are far better equipped than me to do a sutra class, because they're Pali scholars, they can compare things. They have far better knowledge and far more interest as well than me in the suttas. I've seen that pretty much read most of them, but I'm not constantly working with so many different ideas from the Buddhist teaching. So I leave that to the people who are better equipped than me to go into a detailed study about any particular sutta, and just stick with the stuff that I know, or at least that I have more familiarity with. I don't know if I know it, but I just read out that passage. I didn't come across that before, and I found that interesting, and I'm going to ask you the question about it, and see if you come up with the answers. If you're good sutta studiers, you should know what the answer is to that one. So let's see how it goes. It's a discussion that's at one of the enlightened nuns has with Visakha, and she says basically Visakha asks her about the nature of feeling, and she says, "Friend Visakha, what is pleasant feeling? What is the opposite of pleasant feeling? And how does pleasant feeling come into being? And how does it cease?" And she says, "Friend Visakha, pleasant feeling is pleasant when it persists, and painful when it changes." That is what we call pleasant feeling. It's pleasant as long as it's there, and when the minute it's gone, we see that or experience it as unpleasant. Painful feeling is painful when it persists, and pleasant when it changes. So obviously, if you have a painful feeling and it changes into a more painful feeling, that's not pleasant. It's basically what's meant is when the painful feeling changes in intensity, when the pain you have in your back or knees or whatever, where you have a pain, or maybe in your mind, ceases to be there, that is what we experience as a pleasant feeling. Huh? So that is the realm of sensual pleasure. Huh? That's what we experience as a pleasant experience, is basically pain changing into something different, something less intense. Huh? Now Buddha gives a simile which I always found very powerful with the man who has leprosy, huh, to describe sensual pleasure. And leprosy, I always thought it was a skin disease. Somebody corrected me and said it was a motor neuron disease, So, but it manifests as a skin disease and is very itchy. The skin peels off and rots. And it was quite common at the Buddhist time, huh? Leprosy. It was nothing rare. Everybody knew what you were talking about when you talked about leprosy. So he gave that simile that the what we call pleasant experience is that man who has leprosy and the way they dealt with it, with this incredible itch that was going on, is they put their affected limbs close to a fire, roasted that flesh long enough, so you have this incredible painful feeling of the fire burning your skin, and then they peeled that burnt off skin, they peeled that off, and that was a pleasant experience, because this painful feeling of peeling off your skin was more pleasant than the itchiness that they experienced before. And that is a description for our five sense realm. Everything that we delight in is basically that relief of a painful feeling that we experienced beforehand. Just being in the realm of the five senses brings that with it. So, and then came for me the most interesting part. What is with neither pleasant or painful feeling? What is the opposite of that? Or with neutral feelings, we can call it neutral feelings. Anybody? I'll just repeat that you get the hang of it again. Pleasant feeling is pleasant when it persists and painful when it changes. Painful feeling is painful when it persists and pleasant when it changes. So what is about neutral feeling? That's what I thought. It was the same with me, actually. Didn't get it. So they translate neither painful nor pleasant feeling is pleasant when there's knowledge of it, and painful when there's no knowledge of it. Ooh. I found that very, very interesting because it came to mind actually, how often do you sit in your hut and you might not have any bodily pain, you're more or less comfortable sitting there. And just maybe this tiny bit of awareness, wow, I'm in no trouble here. It's actually not bad what is going on. This tiny bit of more awareness brings up that gratitude, that appreciation of what is going on in that moment. And I think it's very easy to overlook that. In your meditation, it's very much the Western attitude that we sit down and we want to achieve something, we want to get something out of the meditation. And with that attitude, we're already setting the course for suffering to arise in our own minds. Instead of sitting down and seeing, wow, it's actually not that much pain going on. It's actually, I feel all right. It's neither especially interesting. No, it is exceptionally unpleasant. Somewhere in between. And just the knowledge and appreciation is lacking in that moment to quick in to develop that into something deeper. Make that a really pleasant feeling. That came to mind. Pardon me? In the moment you become aware of it, you mean? It would become a pleasant feeling then. That's true. And then basically if that pleasant feeling is going to fade, it's going to become unpleasant again. It's not out of the five sense realm. I mean, this neither pleasant nor painful thing as a perfect state of equanimity is false jhana, I think. Huh? That's... She is describing opposites. Huh? She is basically describing the condition for a feeling. She says nothing more than basically that pleasant feeling is the condition for painful feeling, the same as painful feeling is the condition for pleasant feeling. But we have these states where it's not as a completely neutral feeling. We don't know that usually. There's always something going on which is a little bit attractive or a little bit unpleasant. But it's, I just remember that from my own meditation, and when I read that, I just looked a little bit closer, and the mind realized, wow, I'm not in pain. And I don't feel particular desire right now for anything. And sort of, instead of that moment just passing by as something unnoticed, where the mind just searches for the next sense pleasure again, it came up that appreciation of that is nothing special, but the awareness of it made it something beautiful. It was because it's sort of a peaceful, is an appreciation there, is a contentment there already with that. And the nun says here basically, it's because of that not being aware of what is going on in that moment that it is painful, because it's gonna bring you into that rhythm again that you try to get something that you don't have, or you're trying to avoid something that is coming across your path. Is that clear now? Huh? So that's the way I work with that in my meditation, because for some time I work with that aspect of equanimity, and it's usually if there's nothing behind it, it is just the word equanimity. It's just such a vague concept. But to Ajahn Brahm starts often the meditation with just being aware of your body, huh? Feeling inside of your body. And then if you start like that and you feel, well, it's not 100% comfortable, but it's not painful. Huh? It gives a certain perspective of appreciation to that whole process before you get in that mindset of, no, I'm meditating, no, I shouldn't think, no, this and that is supposed to happen. You know, you start with something which is there already, which is, wow, there is no pain, there is no mental distress right now in the moment. So you start with that knowledge and appreciation of something which is there already, instead of that mind building up that expectation, or maybe even frustration, because you think you're supposed where the mind is. You think you know where the mind is supposed to go to already in that moment when you sit down for your meditation. Does that make sense? Well, that is a short passage, and I don't know how you usually do things. I would much more like to have a little bit of an interaction with people. It's just and the problem for me with the sutra reading is I sometimes ask myself, because I don't have this incredible knowledge of Pali or whatnot, what am I supposed to do? Read this stuff to you? You can read yourself, you know. It's not that I have this incredible insights about things that are written down in the sutra that I can share with anybody or what. So that doesn't ring the bell with me. So what is that in your meditation experience? Is that not the case that when you sit down, usually as a Westerner, the mind is programmed that you want to get out something out of your meditation, isn't it? You sit down and you have an agenda already. I want to get better health. I want to get more peaceful. I want to get enlightened. I want this. I want that. And I mean and I'm going to be a good Buddhist. I'm going to at least sit down and meditate 1 hour a day, or 2 hours a day, or 3 hours a day, and then I get something out of it. Huh? Isn't that the case? Who sits down and just says, actually, well, just sit down, see what happens, and appreciate what is going on right now in the moment. Huh? And I mean, there's a lot of that stuff going on that we cannot stop this underlying agenda of trying to get somewhere when we sit down and meditate already. Huh? And that also destroys a lot of the joy of the meditation. Huh? Becomes a chore. Becomes something that a good Buddhist has to do, actually. Huh? We're all meditators. Wow. Amazing, actually. But just sitting down there, best things uncomfortable, and trying to get somewhere, and getting frustrated because you don't get anywhere. Check your agenda. Check if that appreciation is there in that moment already. Sit down. Check if you really sit down because you want to meditate, or you sit down because you want to be a good Buddhist. Or you sit down because that's what Ajahn Brahm says, or what some of the other monks say, or whatnot. Do you want to meditate? Do you enjoy meditation? Yeah? Well, I mean, it's up to you to decide if you feel happy and peaceful. I mean, nobody else can see that, you know. That's a feeling you have to have for yourself. And you say if you enjoy meditation, if that's really true, then there's something that at least find that state enjoyable. And that is the prerequisite to get anywhere in meditation, you know. It's not that... aiming of the mind in a certain direction is basically that readiness and joyfulness with that what is really going on in the moment, and being able to watch that. And so if you say you're dreaming or not, I wouldn't care. And it's, even if you, Ajahn Brahm says, you fall asleep, I don't think that matters, actually. Beautiful if you can do that. But if you sit down and you enjoy sitting down, that's great. But even in the monastery with the monks, it doesn't happen that often. Huh? A lot of people are struggling still after so many years. It's just a force and a concept behind it that is, as a good Ajahn Brahm disciple, I have to sit down and meditate. Huh? It's not that. And there are very few monks who sit down in the monastery because, wow, I enjoy meditation. I want to do it. Especially after a few years, when the first thrill wears off.
You see, I'm not sure, you know, whether it is meditation or not. I enjoy the peace.
Yeah.
You know, I know thoughts will come and all that, but it will go away. But, you know, the moment between thoughts, you know, I enjoy that, and sometimes longer. But sometimes it just drifts off, but I can hear the sound.
What, the outside sound, or the sound of your thoughts?
Yeah, I can hear outside sound. Mm-hmm. But I don't care, it sounds like very far away, but I enjoy it. Nice.
Great, I would call that meditation. I mean, I think it's a big step if you sit somewhere and you're happy with basically with yourself sitting somewhere. Without having the television on, without chatting with somebody, without drinking coffee or tea or whatever, just being there in the present moment, comfortable enough with your body, and especially that feeling, not working against the clock, you know, it's sort of, oh, okay, now I have to meditate for half an hour or whatnot, you know. It's sort of, oh, there's still 25 minutes to go or whatnot, you know. If you sit down, and how often does it happen that you sit down and the time has passed, and there's a feeling of, oh wow, what a shame, it's over already. How often does it occur in your meditation? Yeah? For you alone as well, or in the group meditation? Do you meditate at home as well?
I don't watch TV. I have no computer. I have no mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
I have a beautiful dog, and we walk together, and I love nature. I love the nights, the sky, the stars, the moon. I meditate. My meditation is an appreciation for everything. Mm-hmm. And it's so beautiful to come here in this beautiful temple and just to feel the energy of the divine with all of us, the oneness. And it's so incredibly beautiful, and I'm so grateful for the bliss that I feel, that I experience most of the time in my life. I mean, of course I'm human. I have sick people in my life, and I'm a volunteer teacher, and but overall my appreciation for oneness and just for the beauty of life, especially nature and the divine, I'm so grateful. And it is appreciation. It's not I don't have to come here. I don't have to feel. It's automatic to feel the joy when I'm, at in nature, when I'm here in front of the Buddha. It's just automatic.
Mm.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice. sometimes I come from a different point of view. You know, if you live in the monastery and it's supposed to be considered your job to meditate, it becomes something different, you know. If you come once a week out of a relatively stressful environment, and you sit together with people who are peaceful, actually, and sit together in silence, even I enjoy that, because we don't do group meditation a lot in the monastery, you know? So that can be a very uplifting experience. But for people, I know there are quite a few practitioners who put a lot of effort into sitting many hours a day, even lay practitioners. You know? And there it can become very easily, become habitual, you know, that you think you just have to put the hours in. And it's more about the time that you sit with your eyes closed as the quality that the meditation is supposed to have. And what we have to do too much usually becomes something that is becoming boring, sometimes even stressful. And if you don't have a job as a meditator, then it sort of can be something different, definitely. And it's nice to hear that you still enjoy that so very much, actually, in the also a perfect way of wanting to continue to meditate, because it's nice. Huh? Because, if we realize that the general quality of the mind is exactly that is, if there is a painful feeling, the mind is going to look for a pleasant experience. Huh? That's the nature of the mind, trying to avoid the unpleasant, and it's leading towards the pleasant experiences. There's nothing in the world we can do about that. Huh? That's exactly the function the mind has. And so if the mind doesn't see meditation as something pleasant, as something beautiful, when the inspiration fades, it's going to turn away from it. It's not associating anything interesting, beautiful with it, and it's gonna not gonna stick with it. And that's the reason why Sachin Ram stresses that a lot, that people enjoy their meditation.
Loving kindness, to bring that in with, you know, whatever we're feeling, to be kind, to be kind to the feeling, you know, no matter what it is, to not get involved in it, to just feel the kindness towards it. You know, if I'm angry, I bring in loving kindness to soften it.
Mm-hmm.
And soften the body, soften the mind, soften the feelings. And I just love what I get from coming on a Friday night. I go away and I bring a friend, and she just says, we both go home and we feel as if we're full of bliss and joy.
Mm.
And it just, you know, it's just... And, yeah. And this, the next day we feel it, and it's like we can share it with others.
But why is it so powerful on a Friday night? Because the rest of the week you obviously have a contrast to it. Otherwise it wouldn't... We only perceive that which is in a contrast to what we had before. Huh? If there is a smell in the room, actually, and it's particularly unpleasant, after a while you're not going to smell it anymore. That's just what happens. If there's a smell that is particularly pleasant in the room, after a while you're not going to smell it anymore. Only when there's a fresh breeze coming in, basically giving you a contrast to that existing smell, that's basically when you become aware of it again. So living in a world that is not especially loving and is not especially meditative, for 6 days a week, and then coming here on a Friday night and hearing somebody basically being exceptionally kind and stressing peacefulness and loving kindness, that gives you the kick, actually, and the extra joy.
Absolutely, huh? Yes, thank you, yes.
And what I was pointing out is exactly that problem for people who practice or try to practice or think they practice for quite a few years. Huh? It can become a very habitual sort of a process you're going through, you know, because the mind remembers, well, there maybe was joy once coming up there. Huh? But instead of remembering where the joy was coming up, because the mind didn't have to do anything, huh? Or I felt welcome in that place, and it was peaceful, and there was no stress, it puts that stress onto itself because it wants to achieve exactly that peacefulness that it had before. Huh? But the peacefulness was there exactly because you didn't want anything. Huh? You were aware of that it's okay the way it already is. Huh? There was enough appreciation and kindness to that present moment. Huh? That was what was creating that peacefulness, and that can easily get lost, and I see that in my own practice, basically. Huh? And sometimes here, I refuse to sit down if I don't want to sit down, you know. Just because I'm in robes, I don't see actually that I push myself on the cushion. I don't see the benefit in that. I did that before for a few years, and it's unpleasant, and it spoils the joy of meditation, because you sit down with expectation. And that's killing the process of meditation from the very start. And I find that that is the reason I found that particularly interesting, that passage for me, of how often do I contemplate it? And just this appreciation of not having anything unpleasant going on. Instead of, wow, it's nothing special going on. It sort of has a negative connotation already. If I sit down and say, well, there's really nothing unpleasant which is really bothering me right now. And starting with that appreciation in your meditation from the very beginning is a completely different attitude you start with. And especially not starting with an attitude that you have to meditate for a certain amount of time every day and stuff like that. Or I absolutely refuse to meditate against the clock. A lot of people do that, you know. I mean, here it is a convention when people come together, sit for an hour or a half an hour here on the Friday and an hour on Saturday. And that's fair enough because we have to agree on something. Actually, not everybody can run in and out all the time. But when you sit at home by yourself, you have to decide yourself, obviously, but I never find that beneficial. If you have the clock running, what is the whole thing? If you don't have any appointment afterwards or whatnot, why is there a clock that tells us actually when we have to stop meditating or how long we still have to meditate? You know, it puts that stress on the mind already. Sometimes you have a bad session and an hour seems like 3 hours or whatnot, and sometimes, hopefully, it's really nice and it's wow, is it over already? What a shame. So, not working against the clock, which can also become very habitual after a while.
It is nice to have choices.
Yeah, not to put the mind in a corner from the very beginning, you know. It's sort of what a Western concept again, you know. There were no clocks at the Buddha's time or whatnot. You know? They didn't have an hour or whatnot. They were sitting down, sort of contemplating something, or maybe it was going deeper or whatnot. And then sometime they're doing something else or what. Have a wash in the river, or I don't know what they did afterwards. Do a bit of walking or whatever. But it creates a completely different atmosphere if I force my mind already, basically, now is the time for meditation, now you have to sit for an hour. If I, with my mind, start like that already, it's going to rebel sooner or later. So, why? Why do I have to sit for an hour now? And if it becomes that feeling that you have to sit for an hour, meditation is dead already. And that I just see that happening in the monastery. I don't know how much of you guys meditate at home and how much. So depending on that, you have your own experiences, I guess. Just something to contemplate when you sit down. Is it because I'm a good Buddhist that I sit down? Or do you sit down actually because I really enjoy that? I find that interesting, what is going on when I stop manipulating.
Can I just recall, I know when my son, when he was little and he had to have some emergency operation, and I was in the hospital and just waiting, and I just sat and meditated. That's what helps. I find that meditation helps me in difficult moments, that it's so beautiful to be able to actually be at peace when in the middle of trauma. Yeah.
I find that I have the same experiences, especially with in difficult situations, is sometimes the mind becomes aware what a burden thought can be, you know? How at least with my mind, when it's when it's rotating for a while and it's not doing so well, and then there's moments when you sit down and you know there is that possibility there of not thinking about stuff. And it's just, wow, that's beautiful. You know, there's a possibility that doesn't exist in many minds, many Western minds. It's not even there. There's basically that complete identification with that thought process, you know. If you've never trained your mind to take that tiny step back from what is happening there, then you have to buy all the stuff that comes into your mind. You have to buy into it. That is one of the great benefits I see for me in the meditation. This gives you a perspective to thought. It's not because there's this thought that is neither my thought, nor it's because I think it doesn't have to be anything profound or true or anything. Yeah? It can be complete nonsense and paranoid, stupid, angry. I don't know what. It's just thought coming up. So then having that opportunity to step back from that process and knowing what it feels like to not having to think, especially when it was unpleasant before, that's when I see the real benefits from my practice. It's just where it's so, wow, don't have to buy into that stuff. It's just thought. Beautiful. Absolutely, good point. I mean, the whole outside environment, especially in our Western capitalist society, is pulling in the other direction. You know, as a society of discontent. So it's a completely different point of view to sit down and say, "Wow, great, with what I already have here." Huh? This, every sort of commercial tells you what you don't have. Every sort of planning for the future is basically to build your little security somewhere in a different point in time, actually, where you're not right now. And I mean, it's not just our society, it's also a human condition, I think. We have a body, we want to make sure the body has something to eat tomorrow, right? Something to close itself into more as a roof over its head tomorrow. Huh? So, I mean, just having a body brings that with it already, that we plan for the future. And there's some sort of discontent in that already. But that is absolutely acceptable, especially if you live as a lay practitioner in the world. Huh? It's definitely not a wise thing not to give a damn about anything that's going to happen in your future anymore. You're going to get old and you probably want your little cozy place somewhere, and you see that it's maybe on the first floor, but you don't have to walk the steps up anymore at a certain age and stuff like that. And you have a little bit of money in the pocket still to maintain a bit of the life standard that you had before. And that's all fair enough. But to have a countermeasure to that, at least don't make your meditation something like that. Don't make that another achievement in the future. Huh? That just becomes something to, because I'm not there where I want to be, because I want to become that wise, enlightened person. That's the reason I'm meditating. Huh? So that should be. I'm not even sure anymore if it should be in the back of the mind. Huh? The best thing would be to enjoy contentment, to learn to enjoy contentment. Huh? And Chambam says that again and again, this is good meditation, this contentment above contentment on contentment on contentment. Huh? It's not some point in the future that I just have to manipulate a little bit more and grasp that thing that comes up there, and I just wasn't skillful enough. No, actually, sort of contentment was lost in the moment. Manipulation came up again. And that's the way we're trained. Controlling, manipulating things. But this being awareness of that, what is already there, and that gratitude, it doesn't have to be anything special. For me, it was just basically, so I was surprised how good it felt just sitting. I didn't have any pain. You know, it wasn't uncomfortable sitting, which is not always the case. You know? So often you sit down and it shows the neck or something is wrong actually, and it's, so it doesn't feel right, but I just sit down and wow, that actually feels all right in the body. I'm absolutely not in pain right now. And that was such a beautiful starting point for the meditation. The mind was completely in the opposite direction, not looking for that what is missing in this gratitude to that what was there already. I mean, that's why you come here, I guess, is because that is the reminder that Buddhism can offer you, hopefully. It's just, it goes a little bit in a different direction than you usually trained in the world. It just doesn't... nobody else is encouraging you to do that in the world. It's usually something that you are supposed to achieve, or something that is to be done, or something that is still missing, and if you get it, then you're going to be alright. So the reminder is basically to start maybe with that simple fact that you're not in real pain right now in your body. Or if you have a bit of pain, maybe even that appreciation that it's not a lot of pain, that it's bearable, can have different degrees there of appreciation, definitely. Because it's hardly ever comfortable in that body. What did that Sri Lankan teacher say again? Were you there? Yeah, the monk on Friday, he said his teacher, what did he say? Is it, not, are you feeling good? Okay. Do you feel the good? That's right. That was a nice one. There was a Sri Lankan monk visiting us on Friday, and he had his teacher, and he said he was just sitting there. He wasn't giving big Dhamma talks as well, it seemed. It was just people just sitting there, and then for a while nothing went on, and he was just saying, can you feel the good? And there was nothing then for quite some time, actually. And then somebody brought something up again, actually. Can you feel the good? I like that one, actually. So there was a lot of contentment for him already in the moment, whatever was going on there, actually. Very little expectation. Sounded nice. I like that. Can you feel the good? Uh-huh. Good enough, he said, yeah. Yeah, Ajahn Brahm has said as well a lot. Good enough. 70%, that's right. 70% is good enough. Don't try anything over 70%.
Pleasant feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we don't live our lives in that not painful nor pleasant space.
Mm.
It's very hard to recognize a not painful nor pleasant feeling.
Mm.
You know, there's more and more subtle forms of painful and pleasant. But that absolute middle point, I think, you know, is that it either slips into boredom and a subtle aversion.
And that would be painful already.
Yes, yeah. Mm. So, and perhaps that's what the explanation of it. Either if you're not aware of it, it becomes unpleasant, and if you're aware of it, it becomes pleasant, because that's recognition of contentment.
And that's what I found so interesting. Actually. Maybe then I just thought, how often is just that little bit of awareness lacking to make what people call boredom into something really pleasant?
I think, yeah, that's the, and as you say, it's like the perfect form of that is perhaps, you know, perfect equanimity in fourth jhana or something like that.
Yeah, that would be it was not meant in that sutra as a first, as a fourth jhana, basically, because she's, this awareness of it, definitely, is meant as an exercise for that being basically is the same as because she's giving the opposites, pleasant feeling, painful feeling, the opposite. So neutral feeling that don't expect you to go into jhana to experience the opposite of it. That is the opposite of neutral feeling as an experience, you know. It's on an experiential day-to-day level it's talking there. It's not about the highest achievement. If I was a Pali study, no, I could look that up in the sutta again. And I hope he's not using the word for, I don't know, jhana or whatnot actually in that sutta. But I don't think so, actually. It didn't make sense to me. For me, it was clearly to point out that it's possible to bring the awareness into that moment to change a feeling that could be a pleasant feeling into a pleasant feeling by becoming aware of it. Right? And it's sort of very strong indication of how to build up a gratitude in your practice, huh? Just by being this because it was actually happening in my practice, you know. It's sort of I try to figure out, is it possible that there is that awareness lacking from time to time, and just watching in my meditation in that way just worked, you know. It was sort of from becoming the, yeah, it was just, here we go again, you know, just sitting there. And I just contemplated the passing and sort of, well, what if you become aware that there is nothing wrong with that moment right now? And it was sort of, and then the mind also finds a point of interest, and finds a sort of a level to work with it. And so, okay, there's something to do already. And it's looking, and so, yeah, there's no pain in my body. It's not really uncomfortable. And wow, I don't want really anything right now. That is quite nice. And sort of it just built from there, and was just getting really nice meditation from the normal Joe Blow meditation where you don't have, where the starting point was already wrong because it was a job that I did again, sitting down on the cushion. And so I find that incredibly helpful, just changing the view a little bit in that moment.
That moment comes to me, that awareness that this is good, my body's feeling, you know, just blissful, feeling the awareness of not being in pain or not being wanting anything through yoga, through Tai Chi. It does, it leads to an inner meditation. And, you know, I share that I teach seniors. And it's so wonderful to see women that have not had that contact before develop it. That, you know,
sorry, contact of what?
They haven't had the contact before with yoga or Tai Chi or meditation, and to actually see it developing, that inner awareness, because it's an inner awareness, and it's a softness, it's a gentleness, and it's a It's the beauty that comes from a feeling of beauty within and an appreciation. And, I just think, I'm very fortunate. Thank you.
So you practice it when you teach yoga, basically, is you come in contact with the body more of the people there, I guess, actually. So you do that over a bodily method, bringing that up in people.
Yes, it's a bodily method, but it's also, at the end, there's a meditation at the end, and relaxation meditation,
Well, I'm just a reminder here, if people come into your group, it's everything is great when it's new. It's just, it's especially if you come from somewhere where you hadn't even heard about that or you had never experienced that. But it's just such a part of the mind that we go back to that habit of the appreciation gets lost. And it's sort of, just that yoga posture, I have to do that a little bit better, actually. Or just a little bit more yoga in the morning. Eh? And so, and our mind is just so trained like that as a Westerner that we make it a chore. Eh?
Well, I have to teach, so, I mean, I don't have to, I volunteer. But because I take that position, I'm in a position of responsibility.
Mm.
But even though at times I think, I don't want to go, I'm not well, my dog needs attention. But when I go into the moment of bliss. And afterwards I think I am so grateful that I have this in my life. When we had holidays, I just enjoy the holidays. I thought, I don't have responsibility. I don't have to teach every day. I don't have to rush up here and rush up there at times. But I tell you what, when I went back, which I thought, I don't know if I want to teach so much, but the moment I went back, it was an instant joy. And it was such an appreciation of sharing this with other people.
Mm. Well, I guess Ajahn Bhama said the same, otherwise if he wouldn't enjoy what he was doing, he would just go crazy.
But the mind takes us I'm enjoying my life on my own. I don't need to be doing this. If this is a chore, that's what the mind says. But yet when you make the commitment and you get involved, the body says, no, this is joyful.
Mm.
And then the mind also follows. It's almost as if the mind follows the body sometimes.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a good message for a lot of people. Just it's not enough just sitting. A lot of people don't have enough body awareness, and yoga and things can be very Tai Chi, whatever it is, can be helpful. People getting in contact with their feeling, because I mean the whole metta thing is not an intellectual concept, it's a feeling. It's a really, really strong feeling. Metta, if you have metta. It's not just wishing something well. It's very, very powerful. It's sort of intense feeling. And that is the trick to bring that up. And often it's difficult to do that just through thoughts and well-wishing and whatnot. Some people find that quite beneficial to get in contact with the body first, don't even know where to feel it.
But I think, I do Tai Chi on my own at home, and I do enjoy it, but sharing with people enhances that.
Mm.
It's, meditating on your own at home is nowhere near as blissful as coming here. and meditating with other people. With it's like a synchronicity of energy that it's the energy of the divine, it's the energy of the people, it's the energy of the heart. Hearts connecting.
Well, I mean, it's you just have the character that is able to bring all that energy in that particular moment. If you come in here and you're in a grumpy mood, and it's basically the guy next to you is coughing. If you ever were on a meditation retreat, you would be surprised how much people complain, basically, because they have to sit next to other people. You know, he's coughing, he's breathing too loud, actually. And the guy is walking too slow, actually. He just thinks he's so particularly holy or whatnot. You know, so sort of, a lot of negativity comes up as well. But you bring that with you, that appreciation, which is great. Actually, you know, but just we have to be aware we carry our own little reality with us the whole time. Huh? And as long as you come here and appreciate that, beautiful. But it can change. Huh? Other people, sniff into the whole atmosphere, but they bring themselves into it. And they sort of, they only sniff their own mind, basically. Just gives you a possibility of some beauty, that place. If your mind is inclined to that sort of beauty of sitting together in stillness and somebody cracking silly jokes in a wholesome way, huh? And giving reminding you of good qualities and moves you in a wholesome direction, your mind. Yeah? If you enjoy that sort of thing, then it resonates with you. But if you don't bring that with you, it's not going to resonate with you, obviously. It's not the place itself. It's basically you're opening up to the possibility that place has to offer.
Well, I've been doing meditation and yoga since I was 19. I'm now 66, and it keeps getting better and better. Thank you.
Good. That's good. I think you're on a good path there. How is it for you, Bill? Is it getting better and better?
The mind overtake the body is no good.
What do you mean?
Yes, because the mind tell me, is it like, it's a joy to do volunteer work, it's a joy to help people, you see. But it's a joy when we are in it, you know, helping. And we don't realize our body is actually stressing out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we are joyful.
I don't think it's gonna, if you're really joyful and enjoy what you do, I don't think it's that harmful for the body and shouldn't be that stressful. It's sort of, it can be exhausted, but it's sort of a wholesome exhaust.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
It's really, sometimes the body feel, you know, but
I think Ajahn Brahm has the same thing, you know.
The mind,
he's just tired sometimes and exhausted, you know, but it's not unwholesome or anything.
But after a good meal, nourishing meal, I feel better.
Yeah, or a couple
the of energy, things. Maybe I need the energy back. That's why I, But there is one case, really, truly, you know, that the mind overtake my body and I got the reaction.
What reaction?
I got rashes at the back of my body.
Mm-hmm.
Just at the back of my body, truly, you know. And then I went to the doctor. I was expecting like bed bugs or whatever. But the doctor said, no, it's through stress.
Mm-hmm.
And they even test my blood. I don't know what sort of test, but then my blood is low. So then the doctor said, after 1 month, you have to come and test again. But no medication, no nothing, only rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe you do a little bit too much, possible.
So after that, after 1 month, with all the chanting from the monks, maybe, you know,
maybe.
Then my blood is all right. You know? So now I'm quite aware already of my body.
or by doing too much.
Mm.
You know, sometimes I can, you know.
I think if you have a bring a, enough mindfulness in the moment, you should be aware of what is going on.
I should now.
And then just make that step back, and just don't make so many commitments.
That's why I learned my lesson now. Really, I learned my lesson. But you know, that's why I told Ajahn this teaching. You know, Buddhist teaching. You know, sometimes this because when I'm just joyful in working, but I never know that, you know, it will impact on my body, you see.
Well, and can you bring up the same feeling when you sit down on your cushions? Bye-bye. Okay, very well.
Okay, another thing, Ajahn, okay. When people, like, stress us out, okay? Or, like, you know, stresses out or say not nice things to us, okay? Then from the Buddha's teaching, or Ajahn's teaching, we say, this soon will pass. This too will pass. Never mind. But actually, subconsciously, it's in our mind. You know? Isn't it? So,
oh yeah, definitely.
We could be stressed, you know, subconsciously. But because this soon will pass, and also, it may affect our health too. To comment.
Well, my comment is that we have to look after ourselves as well. And so there's a certain amount that we can give without paying the price, and it shouldn't overstep that other people become more important than yourself. And also that using the joy of giving, doing something generous, and seeing also, can I bring that back to myself? Can I, at the end of the day when I sit down, am I happy with myself sitting down here a little bit in silence or whatnot? Or is it more a restless feeling that is still there? Huh? We can get addicted to that sort of stressful, helping sort of thing because it's exhilarating, you know?
You're right, we can get addicted, but it's a joy when sitting down.
It's good.
When sitting down, you reflect, oh, you know what, the things we do, it's joy.
That is good.
Yeah.
If you can do that, that's great
joy,
already.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I still think you maybe do a little bit too much, you know, because otherwise your body probably wouldn't show that stress reactions. It's a sort of... I mean, the same as with that lady. The teaching is her job, but on the other hand, it's also stressful, you know, when you teach. I mean, it's the same with me. There's usually some joy comes up when I do some teaching, but it's, I'm also quite joyful if I don't have to. I mean, I don't have to do that much, which is good, you know. But I would definitely get stressed out if I had to have a schedule that I had to regularly do that sort of stuff. I don't want to do it, you know. But it doesn't mean that I don't enjoy it when I do it. I still find it stressful. I mean, the Buddha was sitting under the tree and keeping his mind wholesome for 24 hours or something like that. Didn't try to stop thoughts, was just thinking wholesome thoughts. Huh? Neither ill will nor cruelty, what they say is... my favorite translation is inconsiderateness, that's the one.
What is it?
Neither thoughts of cruelty, neither thoughts of inconsiderateness. So the difference is cruelty is directed towards a person or an object. Huh? A sort of ill will is an active form of negativity towards something. Huh? While inconsiderateness is maybe just your own big ego stamping around and stamping and treading on other people's feet because basically you don't care. You want the biggest piece of the cake. Huh? So you take the biggest piece of the cake And it's not because you have ill will towards anybody else. It's just because you care so much for yourself that you don't care that the other people might not have any cake anymore. See the difference? So basically, he neither had thoughts of ill will, nor inconsiderateness, nor thoughts of sensual desires for 24 hours. And then you realized, wow, but thinking in itself makes the body tired. When the body gets tired, unwholesome states of the mind are going to come up again. So how about basically I stop that thought process? And that's basically when he went into the deep meditations where you could really rest. So you see, he was doing very wholesome actions, not physically obviously, but mentally, and still it's stressful. Huh? Just doing stuff. Thoughts itself is stressful. Huh? Moving the body around especially. It's all stressful, that stuff. So there has to be that balance when we realize that is enough, even with goodness, with kindness, with whatnot, you know. There has to become the point where we see, oh, now it's time for goodness, kindness, peace for myself, huh? To rest. Look after yourself.
Hmm? Thank you.
Sorry, I didn't.
I'd like to ask, does play come into it? So, in terms of the expectation, you know, for example, I've had a knee operation,
mm-hmm.
and it's been quite exciting, sort of anticipating doing some meditation on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, sort of being neutral to the pain and just being more playful for the experience.
Uh-huh.
And likewise, stressed out on sort of ideologically helping people and things. It's more play if you're equanimous about, you know, with equanimity comes more playful anticipation. I mean, where's play? I mean, when I was doing the operation, I was fully aware that the doctors, you know, because it was their profession, probably didn't have metta in terms of their operation, you know, so it's all in the attitude, isn't it?
It definitely reduces the stress, the attitude. Huh? But like I said, just having the five sense bases and also the six sense bases, smell, taste, touch, hearing, sight, is stressful in itself already. Huh? If you ever had a migraine or whatnot, slightest bit of light, any sounds, is very, very painful. In this sort of extreme circumstances, we sometimes realize that basically just having the five sense spaces open is stress in itself already. I have a friend who just recently came to the monastery, and he said he has chronic fatigue now. He said just walking 20 meters, he's completely wrecked, has to sit down like an old man, basically. Yeah? And he said everything else but meditation and sleep is stress. Watching television is stress. Playing video games is stress. Walking is stress. Huh? Everything else but sleeping and meditation.
So does play mean anything to you? Sort of having a playful attitude?
The playful attitude basically reduces obviously the stress. Same as the wholesome qualities of the source that the Buddha had there under the trees. If you put the same effort into thinking unwholesome thoughts the whole time, I don't think you can even do it for that amount of time, you know, which just wear you out. It's because it's very wholesome that there's huge amount of energy there in the first place. But it still costs energy. Huh? And that has to recharge sooner or later again, either through sleep or you go into really deep meditation. That's when people need very little sleep, when you can get into the really deep states. Because it's also complete relaxation for body and mind.
I mean, it seems to relate to the equanimity for me, though. I mean, if you're neutral to, you know, if I'm not trying to get anything out of it, if I'm neutral to the experience, go into it with a more playful attitude.
Mm.
It's more joyful.
Oh, definitely, yeah. But it still takes something, all of you. I don't see that as stress in the sense now of, oh, I'm stressed out. It takes energy. Everything experience takes energy away from me. That's the reason we have to sleep. Awareness takes energy out of it. But if you make it a joyful experience, obviously you can maintain a much higher amount of energy as if you put negative energy into it. But it's still it's fuel. So it runs out and has to be filled up again, I think. No, but obviously good attitude if you really manage to watch your pain with a little bit of interest or whatnot, realizing it's maybe not that bad, the sort of sensations there. Great. Beautiful. Better than being grumpy and complaining, actually, and wanting to be the prince at home and pampered. So, any urgent questions still? Or we wrap it up? It's 4:10 already, I realize. So you all remember now, when you sit down next time for your meditation, just look and, wow, it's actually not that painful. Wow, I actually don't really want anything right now. Maybe you just start your next meditation that way. Remember that it's sort of neither pleasant nor painful feeling, or also called neutral feeling, is painful when there is no awareness of it, and is pleasant when there is awareness of it. So that is what you have learned today, or being reminded of today.